Welcome to Deconstructed. I'm TJ O'Hara, the principal political analyst for IVN. Our goal on Deconstructed is to break down important political issues with outstanding guests so you can develop your own more informed opinion. My guest today is Bonnie Siegel, the founder of Political Branding Associates, which works with political campaigns to create and bring a candidate's brand identity to market. In that regard, she has amazing insight into demographic and other shifts that are beginning to have significant impact on our elections. Bonnie, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Deconstructed.
Thank you, TJ. It's a great honor to be here.
Now, you're also the founder of ASE Group, which did an amazing job of event management for a $2 billion group of divisions I was leading a few years ago. So knowing you from the past, I've just got to ask, what's a nice woman like you doing in the world of politics?
I took the dark side. I got to be honest. No, I think what happened, TJ, is that the corporate world has landed a long time ago what branding is all about, and the political world was just discovering it. So that was an easy segue for me to be asked to participate on the political side, and one thing led to another, and we founded Political Branding Associates specifically to brand candidates and campaigns and issues.
Now, what is identity branding in the world of politics?
So if we use corporate America as a good foundation to understand branding, it is an opportunity to take a candidate and almost look at them like a product. How do you bring them to market? What are the components that are necessary for them to be able to communicate their strategy? What is the overall goal and objective, not only of their campaign or whatever issues they represent? And how do you brand them in light of being able to really think about them in relationship to how does someone buy them? How do they think about them? How do they orchestrate who they are and what they mean to them on a personal level? As we buy brands, when we go shopping to buy anything, we choose to put our name on, or better yet, put their name on us.
Now, there's a growing base of independents and a demographic shift towards a younger electorate. What's different about that, and how do you position your brand communication appropriately for those changes?
So that's a great question. So first and foremost, I think every candidate looks for their base. What's the grassroots? What is going to, in essence, get them to be a little bit more familiar? And what are the things that ideally speak to them? And obviously, boomers are a pretty established grassroots group. They have their opinions. They have their lifestyle issues. They have the components that are important to them. And then now, as you point out, so vividly, there's this next generation of leadership coming up the ranks that we labeled millennials, and they have a very different framework for buying. The things that are important to a boomer are very uniquely not important to a millennial. And when you're marketing any brand, you have to think about what's the demographic, what's the market you're branding to or selling to, because there's an obvious relationship between a brand, its marketing tactics, and then closing the sale. And millennials are a very unique demographic, and they have very specific buying mindsets.
Now, how do their value structures differ from the more traditional elements of the electorate? And are there vocabulary differences? How do you approach millennials?
So I think in general, yes, there's huge differences between millennials and some of the more senior members of our population. And millennials in general, just in a very generic way, I think look for experiences over stuff. They appreciate social responsibility and corporate responsibility. They look at the world from a different vista. They have a very specific lens that they tend to judge the world by. They're also a population that was heavily, heavily affected by the downturn in 2007, 2008. And that has major impact in their thinking, their buying, what's important to them, what they value, how they look at certain elements of what value means. For instance, if you graduated college in 2007, 2008, the sadness is they, in essence, did not have the same job opportunities as some of the classes that graduated before them. So already they have redefined what value means to them. If they can't have money per se, they might look for travel as an opportunity, or how are we helping the poor, and what are the things that we're doing to make sure that our class system stays a little bit less disparate. So millennials have a very unique way of looking at the world. And the reality is, if you want to take it into politics, they haven't yet strutted their stuff. They're just beginning to realize the power of communication and the power of politics. And it will be very interesting in the next 4 to 8 years to see if they choose to use politics as a means to an end to get what they want. They do not have a great reputation as of yet for actually coming out and voting. And because, in essence, they don't really use their power, a lot of people on both parties do not value them in the way in which I think we should be taking them into consideration, because they haven't yet used their buying power. But they will.
Now, when we look at the value structure difference and the vocabulary differences, their interpretations of words like liberty, for example, I wrote 3 books back in 2010, and in 2 of those books, I identified how the liberal element approached marketing, how the conservative element approached marketing, and conservatives tend to allow liberals to define the market space, from my perspective at least. So looking at the words liberal and progressive versus conservative, I think that has a significant difference among millennials in general. And how do you see that? Do you see them gravitating because of the words that are selected towards a particular party, or are they listening more for detailed content?
So first and foremost, one of the things that I do when I speak to a large group is I ask them the last time that they went to college, when were they attracted to the word conservative or discipline? I mean, think about the opportunities that we have, and you've made a phenomenal point in suggesting that we've allowed liberals and progressives to brand us as conservative, disciplined, constitutionalist, libertarians. And when you think about the word progressive and liberal, it is so much more attractive to a young person who has maybe no idea of politics at all. So if I say to someone, would you rather be a liberal or would you rather be disciplined, what would you think they would answer? So first and foremost, I think that the liberals and progressives have taken a playbook and run with something without necessarily even having to define what that means, just by virtue on how they've branded themselves. The second piece to your question is, when we think about liberty and we think about freedom, we have a population of young people who have yet to ever experience anything other than liberty and freedom. So when you ask someone to define themselves, they usually do it within the context of what they're familiar with. Since our children were not raised without liberty or freedom, the notion that they could lose it or potentially have to protect it is much more foreign to them than it would be, for instance, in a country like Honduras or Guatemala, where people are fleeing. So that also plays into their thinking and the relationship that they have with political parties in trying to better understand what the goals and objectives are. So it doesn't help us by talking about liberty and freedom when it's something that they themselves would never think that they could ever be without.
Very interesting points. Bonnie, we're going to take a quick break and talk more about candidate identity branding when we come back. My guest today is Bonnie Siegel, one of the premier candidate branding strategists in the country. Bonnie, we were talking about the nature of campaign marketing to millennials before the break. And what I'd like to do is get your opinion on what are the parties doing right and what are the parties doing wrong? And in that regard, what should they be doing?
Well, I think that in general, continuing the conversation in relationship to just how they've branded themselves vis-a-vis liberty and freedom versus liberal and progressive, it flows beautifully into the fact that both parties, when you think about millennials, have not taken the same strategy to embrace them. And I personally think Republicans are making a huge mistake by not spending the time and energy necessary. Now, maybe not in an election year, but in an off year, really driving their strategy and explaining to millennials what does freedom mean, or what would the lack of freedom mean? What is patriotism? What is liberty? Because those words are very foreign. And the liberals and progressives have done a wonderful job of framing themselves as the peacemakers, the people who are looking to bring new value to the millennials. They are going to create a country that is based off of wonderful idealistic ideals. We are the party that takes care of those who can't take care of themselves. We are the party that, in essence, would never leave someone behind. And again, if you look at the demographics economically, most millennials did not get a great start back in the early days of 2008 through 2012, even to today, where the economy is obviously kicked off in 16, but they're still catching up. So when they think about what is important to them, they definitely include those who don't have as much as them simply because they themselves sort of suffered a bit of an economic setback. So they immediately align with the Bernie Sanders values of free college, free food, free education. Everything should be free. Healthcare is an opportunity that should be free, not something that you choose to have. So they frame the conversation in a way that millennials are really excited about, although no one is explaining to them who's paying for it. Whereas the Republicans have sort of lost their voice. They're not taking the time necessary to really explain how an economy can actually build the bottom up versus from the top down. And although I think we speak a lot about tax cuts and health care and immigration and trade, we're not, as Republicans, doing the best job we possibly could do in bringing them on board. And I think we are going to see the demographics of this country change as they are changing quickly, and we're not responding to it fast enough.
What advice would you give to libertarians? Because when I look at their philosophy, where they're saying we should have small government, we should be fiscally responsible, and yet we should be very, very liberal with regard to personal liberties, that makes sense and it complies with the Constitution better than either the liberal message or the conservative message, but they seem to be unable to articulate it. What would you advise the Libertarian Party to do in that regard?
Well, I think the problem with libertarians in general is that they very much have a very long tunnel in front of them. They don't think about the world at large the same way as Republicans do, sort of playing in the ballpark with our neighbors outside of our state lines or our country's borders. I think libertarians have more of a focused mindset as to let's take care of ourselves first, which tends to not land well with millennials. They have a much bigger view of the world as being something that everybody should have a right to a place in. If you look at immigration as a policy, that's something that is really rallying the millennials to speak out and say, we should have open borders and we should have people coming here who can have a better lifestyle, a better way of making the world a better place. Whereas libertarians do not speak in that language. That's not their voice. That's not how they see the world. And economically, that's not how they see how we go about closing business. I think libertarians will have a hard time breaking through to millennials. I think Republicans have a much better chance at breaking through to millennials. I just think they need to change the conversation and not be so succumbed to being labeled in negative verbiage. And that has a very big deal to do with how millennials see the world, because one thing I'd like to just bring out is the fact that millennials do not read whole articles. They view the world through soundbites, through headlines, through social media. They've been captured not by the content, but by the big tent. And that is another thing I think that we're missing an opportunity to embrace them by realizing that the way they collect news, the way they collect information is uniquely different than boomers.
Very, very interesting. Now, let's be specific. I know that you participated in Senator Ted Cruz's campaign for the Republican presidential nomination. I believe you're working with his campaign as well on branding within the context of his current relatively tight Senate race with Beto O'Rourke. Help us understand what you're doing from a messaging standpoint and what advice you're giving him, and in effect, whether or not he's following it, his campaign's following it, as far as projecting him beyond the realms of the more core constituency of the Republican Party.
So I think first and foremost, if you look back in 2014-15, I mean, he had been branded as the guy who took down or shut down the government. So our role in bringing him to market was to use that as a leverage to the firebrand that he really is. And if you really listen to Senator Cruz or even look at some of the policies Trump has enacted, Trump actually went off of Cruz's playbook from a policy standpoint. So ideally, at that point, when we were first to market, we launched back in March of 2015, his campaign, and then 15 other candidates followed him, including President Trump. There was a great opportunity, first and foremost, to create what we call in the branding industry brand awareness. So nobody had heard of him. And the truth is because he was so unknown, there was like a 4% brand identity opportunity at the time. We had a very long runway to be able to build who he is, what he stands for, what his values are. And I think the campaign did an excellent job of doing that. We moved him from obviously being pretty much unknown to being a well-known player as a conservative, as a constitutionalist. And he actually came in second in the race to president prior to President Trump winning the primary. The unique part about now doing his Senate race is the fact that we had really built a foundation as to who he is. And the beauty about Senator Cruz is he says what he means what he says, and he actually does what he says he's going to do. And ideally, there was a natural transition for him to keep the brand that was designed and communicated and just layer in how Texas plays into his mindset and how important Texans are to him. So it wasn't a change of brand. It actually was a continuation of the brand we were building, just giving him a little bit more visibility at a time where he was already known.
Now, there's a wild difference between backgrounds. His background, clerking for both a court of appeals and a Supreme Court justice, domestic policy advisor for Bush 43, assistant deputy attorney general, Texas solicitor general. He's argued before the Supreme Court, I think, 9 different times and has about 70 Supreme Court briefs. And he's running against Beto O'Rourke, whose background includes a stint as a punk rock bassist, live-in nanny, proofreader, software and website developer before moving into the realm of politics. So there's this big difference. And my impression is Beto O'Rourke is kind of positioned as the young, hip guy, and yet there's only a year's difference in age. Mm-hmm. How is that construct aligning?
So I think, again, it comes down to who are they communicating to. I think there is no doubt that if you compared resumes, if you compared accomplishments, if you compared the work that both of these individuals have done, there's tremendous runway between Beto O'Rourke and Senator Ted Cruz. I mean, this is a man who truly developed a mindset that he wanted to be principled. He wanted to bring conservative principles back into the forefront. He fought feverishly for the Supreme Court nominees that we just saw appointed through President Trump. He had tremendous impact and had spoken extensively about Israel and moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem and to cut off Palestinian aid and the Taylor Force Act and the immigration issues that we have. And then you have Beto, who is basically singing to acquire liberalism, this concept of freedom, this concept of free. And we have to remember there's a big difference between freedom and something being free, although the root of the word is similar. And the reality is that Senator Cruz truly played his ground game. I truly believe there will be no problem of him winning the Senate race in a week and a half. I believe my heart will absolutely secure for him his seat at the table, which he has worked and earned. But your question about Beto is truly the essence of who the man is. He's a Columbia graduate. You can't find a more liberal school to go to. He was white, elite. Senator Cruz came from somewhat of an immigrant family. He worked his way up the ladder. The reality is the two of their backgrounds are the opposite of what they stand for now, because one had to yearn for freedom and liberty and justice, and the other one was handed it. Beto himself has said that he was a white privilege, as he calls it, and I think there's a huge difference on how they see the world. I personally do not believe that Beto O'Rourke has the substance that Senator Cruz has, and I think ultimately Texans have tremendous substance, and it's going to be really important to them when they get weed through the issues, they will realize who in essence is the stronger candidate.
Well, that's an interesting distinction. And Bonnie, we're going to take a quick break and talk more about a very unique political brand when we come back. My guest today is candidate branding expert Bonnie Siegel. Bonnie, we were talking about candidate identity branding before the break. So let's talk about the elephant in the room, no pun intended, the Trump brand. What is it and how is it different?
So first and foremost, let's really congratulate President Trump for being his own brand. Whether we love him, hate him, like him, dislike him, this is a man who truly has mastered the art of branding as well as marketing and selling his brand. So for a brand strategist, he's an icon. I think in general, what we have to remember is the Trump brand had been built for a very long period of time. I mean, he was a young man in his early 30s, building somewhat of a real estate empire for himself. And yes, there's tremendous opportunity that his father gave him, but at the end of the day, he surely was able to leverage his own style, his own personality, to be able to put names on buildings, which I find fascinating that people have yet to really understand that millions and millions of people have read his name before he even came into the political world. He had a certain sense of business savvy that people related to. He had a certain sense of bully tactics, in, per se, where people actually turned it into respect versus a negative. And I think that he himself had an opportunity to leverage three things that he stands by for his brand. One is he actually never says he's wrong. Two, he never, ever wants to apologize. And three, he will change the conversation if need be. And he's mastered it. So his brand truly does speak his language, his way, in his time frame, and when he, in essence, feels it's important to turn a corner and change the framework of the conversation, he's been very successful at that, too. I would say that the Trump brand is something that had been built prior to him becoming president, and he is just now leveraging it and executing against that brand.
Now, his brand lost the popular vote. It didn't exactly resonate with the Republican establishment. So what impact is it having now, positive and negative, relative to his party? And does it translate for other candidates?
Well, I think when you look at the establishment, anybody who rocks a boat is a discomfort. It's a disruptive force. So TJ, coming from the business world as you do and as I do, a disruptive force is something that you really didn't know that you ever wanted, but once you have it, you can't live without it. And I think the establishment themselves really believed in their heart that there's no way he could rock that boat effectively. And I also think that's probably the reason why the establishment was uncomfortable in rallying for Cruz when they had the opportunity, because the truth is they themselves see the world through an establishment mindset. Both candidates, Trump and Cruz, who were the two finalists on the Republican primary side, were both disruptive forces, which tells us that the population, the demographics, are asking for something different. Now, the notion that they wouldn't necessarily want someone like a Trump is proving itself out relative to you mentioning the populist vote. But I also think one of the reasons why we have an electoral college is to avoid the opportunity of certain populist states from taking over the government and not giving people a chance or a right at the table. So that becomes a whole other dialogue as to whether we would want an electoral college change or go to a populist vote. And I truly think that we should stay with an electoral college because it gives everybody a chance and a right at the table, whereas the populist vote would be taken over by large urban areas, which are not necessarily reflective of Republican values in some of the smaller rural areas. Not that I was asked to plug a book, but there is a colleague of mine who written a book called The Great Revolt, Brad Todd, who was a pollster, and Selena Zito, who was a journalist. And the truth is they really uncover for the public what actually happened in the election. Who came out? Where were these people coming from? Who are they? And why all of a sudden, as we use the word ants out of wood, did they have such an impact on changing the course of events? I think that there is an undercurrent in this country that has not had a voice, and Trump gave them a voice.
You know, you bring up an interesting point when you raise the polls, because the polls were so uniquely wrong in the last election. How do you think independents and millennials view the Trump brand privately?
I think that the independents are just that, people who are unwilling to put a label on themselves as Republican or Democrat, and what it basically gives them is the right to vote either way without having to be swayed. I think millennials are beginning to feel the effects of the economy, and that might help them to become a little bit more in tune and strategic about how they go about voting. But the truth is I'm not sure that Trump resonates right now with either of them, but I think ultimately his policies or what he does for the country may.
Bonnie, in the limited amount of time we have left, where can our listeners go to learn more about you, Political Branding Associates, and your political clients?
Well, I think the first thing I'd love your listeners to do is go to our website. There's tons of articles and podcasts and webcasts that I've done, and that's www.politicalbrandingassociates.com. I also have a Twitter, which is at PBA Branding or at Bonnie Siegel PBA, or they can Instagram me at Political Branding ASSOC. So I would love to hear from them. If they want to go to Facebook, they can go to at Political Branding Associates as well.
Well, fascinating discussion, Bonnie. You've given us a lot of insight into identity branding within the world of politics and the potential impact of the evolving demographics. It's a pleasure having you on the show, and thank you again for joining me on Deconstructed.
Thank you, TJ. I couldn't be happier sharing what branding can do, not only for a campaign, but also an issue or a candidate. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Bonnie.